This is Mark Lane.
This is Robert Groden.
This is Dick Russell.
This is Jim Mars.
This is Lisa Pease.
This is Dr. David Mantic.
This is Cyril Weck.
This is Jim DiEugenio.
This is Joan Mellon.
This is David Lifton.
This is Jerry Polakoff.
This is Gary Shaw.
This is Bill Kelly.
This is Greg Burnham.
This is Gerald McKnight.
This is Sherry Feaster.
This is Joseph McBride.
This is Bill Davey.
This is Dave Ratcliffe.
This is David Talbot.
This is Doug Horn.
This is Walt Brown.
This is John Barber.
This is Judge Joe Brown.
This is Vince Palomera.
This is Bill Pepper.
This is Richard Belzer.
This is Oliver Stone.
This is Governor Jesse Ventura, and you're listening to Black Op Radio.
Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T-minus 30 seconds. T-minus 25 seconds. T-minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Len Osanek, and today we're speaking to author Flip DeMay. Hello.
Hello, Len.
Pleasure to have you on. You have a
Thank
book
you.
That came to
Thank
my
you
attention.
For having me.
Yeah, you have a couple of books, but the one that caught my attention was the Lee Harvey Oswald Files, Why John Kennedy Had to Be Assassinated. And I believe it was Vince Palomera who mentioned this was the best book he'd seen on the case, and I thought, well, it's quite a statement. I better look into it myself. And I was pleasantly surprised to find just how matter-of-fact this book was. And it just really impressed me. There's a few quotes from Sherlock Holmes here and there. And it just really, follow the facts. Don't make up your mind. You can't make up your mind without all the facts. And you just lay them out wonderfully. And it's a good primer. It's hard to say what is the best book, right? But
absolutely. It's too much honor from Vince Palomera. Yeah, right. I understand what he means, but there are a lot of magnificent books about the murder. I think if you could be in the top 100, that would already be very good. So the best book ever written about Kennedy is too much honor.
Yeah. Well, I very much recommend this book. It came out, I think, 2015, 2016. It's a few years old now, but look, let's get, for listeners who are not familiar with you, let people know what got you interested in the case, just interested, and then what got you interested enough to write.
Well, a lot of people are very interested in the murder on Kennedy because it's a sentimental reason. I'm nearly 65 years old now, so I was about 8 years old on the moment that Kennedy was killed. And like everyone in my generation, we expected a lot from America and certainly a lot from Kennedy at that moment. He was a sort of mythical figure. And then all in a sudden, he was dead. And we saw that on television. It was one of the first really global situations where everybody on the whole planet was looking at the same images. And I saw the faces of my parents, my father and my mother, who were really disturbed. Kennedy is killed, Kennedy is killed, and it made a deep impression on me. And then later on, I read a lot about the murder. And I was, for 10 years, I was a lawyer in Belgium, so also the legal aspects of the case were very interesting for me. And then afterwards, I became a statutory auditor, doing financial audits and analytical work. And so I was also interested in that part of the discovery of the facts behind everything that was written. With the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy murder, it was the right moment to write in Dutch for the Belgian market a book about it, because there was not a really good book on the market. And on top of that, reading so much about the Kennedy murder, I read approximately, I think, 50 or 100 books. The more I read about it, even the good books, the less I knew for myself, because one book says there were many Oswalds, Oswald perpetrators. The other book said it was certainly Oswald who killed Kennedy. The third book said it was Johnson. The fourth said it was the Mafia. And so you had so much information that at the end you did not know anything. And so this was the moment with the 50th anniversary for me to say, let's put every thing that I can find about the murder on a heap and start reading with the real authentic documents, the real testimonies, the real police reports that are written about it, and try to figure out, to select what is really beyond reasonable doubt, and to put the case together with these pieces only, so that I have only the pieces that are trustworthy and that I can say, we know this, we know that. There is a lot that we don't know, but we can make some assumptions about the missing pieces, and in the end you get a really good picture about what is the really happened. And so I wrote a book, which was very good for me to order my own mind and to realize for myself what I believed and what I did not believe, because you have to be very selective in the process. And then the first book was about Kennedy and the murder itself, and it was all around Kennedy. But then I realized that to understand the case, you have also to look at Lee Harvey Oswald, who is a very strange man, a mousy man, but a smart man, a kind man. His two best friends, I met Bull Frazier, his best friend in Dallas, and Ernst Titov, his best friend, a friend in Minsk. And both said to me that he was a nice man, he was a kind man, he was a smart man, he had some strange ideas, he was a communist, and he had he was a misfit in many ways, but he was a nice and kind man. And you cannot understand the case without looking at what happened with Lee Harvey Oswald. Because this man is in the middle of four murders. So he was himself murdered by Jack Ruby. He killed Tippit. He was involved in the Kennedy murder without any doubt. They said that he tried to kill the Walker. General Walker. And so there's a lot of cases around this little mousy man. And you cannot understand anything about the real picture of the Kennedy murder without looking at him. And so I wrote the second book, especially centered around the figure of Lee Harvey Oswald and everything that we can know about him.
Now, was there a catalyst? I mean, you mentioned two words that caught my eye here. You know, you said mythical, that John Kennedy was mythical, and people in Europe and around the world expected a lot. This was the man who had, like, the new frontier. He was really going to lead the whole world to the future, not just America. He was thinking of other nations. And also you used the word believe, which a lot of people in the research community, they get caught up in that. I believe this, but what are the facts? So was there one item that piqued your interest that you said, I have to write about this? And I'll just say, preface it, for me, it was always Commission Exhibit 399.
Well, indeed, as you say, Len, JFK was a mythical figure. A myth is always partial truth and partial, of course, imagination. The expectations were very big in 1963. Everybody got richer year after year. The life changed in such a way from 1963 to 1968, Woodstock and all those things. People were free. The war was behind us. It was strange. 1963, it's almost the same period of time between 9/11 and today, and the end of the World War II and the killing of JFK. So 1945 was only 18 years ago, and this society was so much changing. There were new ideas. People were trying to end the Cold War, to start all over. It was a time of peace. It was a time of love. Everything seemed possible. And for the new generation, who was coming to age at that moment, we thought that we would do it better than our parents had done it in the generation before us. Unfortunately, afterwards, we have to admit that we made some big mistakes for ourselves. But certainly in 1963, this hope was still there. And if there was one person who was impersonating all this hope of the whole world, it was certainly John Kennedy. And then with one bullet or two, three bullets or two bullets, it was all destroyed in just 6 seconds. And that makes, of course, this case until today very important, because the whole history of the United States and the whole history of the world changed on the moment that JFK was murdered. Johnson, with a total different personality, became the president of the United States. Bobby was castrated. People like Edgar Hoover regained their power. All in a sudden, there was the war in Vietnam. And then, indeed, 5 years later, everything of the big dreams of 1963, of world peace and coexistence in the world, was destroyed. That's what makes the case still important today, because to understand where we lost it, we have to know why we lost it and who was responsible for our big loss in Dallas in 1963.
Yeah, I think that's shared by most people in the JFK research community, no matter what you believe, if there was Oswald, it was in the doorway or somewhere else, whatever, or the Zapruder film, whatever happened to it, but that they go, the world changed then, and not for the better. Yeah, so that if we look back,
some things were better after the murder on Kennedy, because now we have also the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon. And you may be sure that with Kennedy as president, that we wouldn't have been marching on the moon in 1969. That would have been impossible. It was a typical Johnson project because it was a lot of public money to be spent in Houston, in Texas. And Johnson was the man of the big programs. And of course, with the legacy of Kennedy, because now that Kennedy was dead, everything that Kennedy ever said had mythical proportion. And so because Kennedy have said we have to be on the moon before the end of this decade, this all in a sudden became important for America. But we would never have realized it without the Kennedy murder. So there are some minor positive aspects to the case.
Right now, is there an item catalyst that made you write this book about Lee Oswald? Like you mentioned, you know, the book starts off like what happened in November 22nd, because a lot of people will have an interest and they'll read, but it takes another step for you to decide to write about it. And I'm always curious what that is.
Indeed, writing is a process. And in the process, you can decide for yourself what do you believe and what do you not believe. It's sometimes said that the Kennedy murder is a puzzle with the size of a football field. And indeed, you have to select some parts of the puzzle on which you can concentrate and try to find solutions for certain details that can help you to see the bigger picture. And so I concentrated on Lee Harvey Oswald because I have a strange feeling of kindness to this man. He, as I said, he's a mousy man. He's a loser. He's a misfit. He's a communist. He behaves strangely in many ways. But on the other hand, his mother was a complete lunatic. In his youth, nobody loved him. He was very insecure. And this man deserves our attention in a certain way, whether he was the real murderer of Kennedy or not. He deserves an open mind, that you look at him starting from the truth, because the Warren Commission, one of the big problems with the Kennedy case is that the investigations that were done were specifically done not to solve the case, but to make the case more complicated than necessary and to cover up what really happened. And that makes that it is very difficult to say something about Lee Harvey Oswald without thinking about him as the man who shot Kennedy, which is reasonable in a certain way, because at a certain moment there is a rifle that was found. It is his rifle. So at a certain moment there is a rifle, and the rifle that is found is Oswald's rifle. I made some extra investigations into that matter to be certain, and I bought, for instance, the photos of Kirk, the official photograph of the Warren Commission, to be certain that the rifle that you see in the backyard photo is indeed the rifle that was found in the Texas School Book Depository, and other things that I looked for to be absolutely certain. So the rifle that is found is his rifle. And we also know that the shots came from the sniper's nest. You can say there was a frontal shot or not. You can discuss about that. But it's not necessary to prove that Oswald was not the perpetrator, whether or not there was a frontal shot. So I leave that out of my book, because I think if you say there was a frontal shot, you lose 50% of your readers on page 5. And when you say there was no frontal shot, you also lose 50% of your readers on page 5. So you don't need it. The only way to be certain that there was a conspiracy that killed Kennedy is to look whether or not Oswald was the shooter. And then you start from scratch. And then you say, okay, of course he was. He was in the school book depository. What did he do there? He read in the newspaper that the most famous man and the most successful man on the planet, John Kennedy, was riding by. And all in a sudden, this crazy misfit decides, I'm going to kill the President Kennedy, and I'm going to be world famous, and I'm going to be a historical figure in 5 minutes. So what does he do? He has a rifle, and he disassembles this rifle to smuggle it into the school book depository. When he does that, I have such a rifle. I can show it. Your listeners cannot see it, but this is the exact same rifle, so the Carcano. You can disassemble it, but you have 7 different screws, and you can only disassemble it with a screwdriver. So what does this hypothetical Oswald do? He disassembles the rifle. He knows that when he will reassemble the rifle, that he needs 6 shots to adjust the rifle to make it usable again. But nevertheless, he disassembles this rifle, and in pieces apart, it's only 13 centimeters shorter than when he should have left it in one piece. But nevertheless, he takes this into a package. The shortest piece that you have in when you disassemble the rifle is 88 centimeter. And what does he do? He puts it in a package of maximum 68 centimeters. So the sister of Buell Fraser says 68 centimeter. Buell says 60 centimeters. But anyway, the largest piece is 88 centimeters. He puts it in a package of 68 centimeters. How does he do that? We don't know. He puts the 7 different screws, and he puts them there in the package. But then he forgets to put the screwdriver there, which is strange, because he just needed a screwdriver to put the parts of the rifle apart. So he knows that he needs the screwdriver. Without the screwdriver, he cannot do it. And even the Warren Commission, who does everything to incriminate Oswald, admits that he probably did it with a dime, which is impossible. I tried to do it. He cannot do it with a dime. And even if he does it with a dime, he knows that the rifle is not adjusted and cannot be used he can, of course, be lucky that the rifle was adjusted just as it should be, without any adjustment, but normally the rifle would not be usable. And then so he is there in the school book depository. Kennedy passes by, he shoots Kennedy, and he has no plan whatsoever, because he has no reason to kill Kennedy. He has no motive to kill Kennedy, because the reason that the Warren Commission can give is to say, he was an aggressive man. He was a communist and he wanted to kill Kennedy to be famous. But then he meets the policeman on the second floor. He does not say, look, I killed Kennedy and I did it for that reason. No, he walks out of the building and then he kills Tippett and then he's caught. And then in the end, he's in front of the cameras. And instead of saying, I am famous now, I killed Kennedy and I did it for the reason that I hate capitalists, he says, I'm a misfit. I'm a lousy, mousy man, and I'm a patsy, which is so strange. And then you start looking at the real facts. This is the picture that you have in the Warren Commission. And so with the Warren Commission, you have to say he was on the place of the shooting. It is his rifle. He was a communist. And he killed the police agent, and so he must be he must be the perpetrator. But then you look at the facts, and then you say he was a bad shooter. But a bad shooter can also he has to touch the rifle, but because he has to reassemble it, he has to touch the clip to put the bullets in it, which is a smooth brass object. He has to shoot with the rifle. And in the end, there are no fingerprints on the rifle, never found. There is no proof that the rifle was shot that day. He never bought any bullets. He never practiced with the rifle. He disassembled the rifle, which is very strange. He could have brought the rifle into the building in another way. Let's say if he brought the rifle and he put it somewhere behind a door in a closet, and he waits, and he can bring the rifle into the building, well adjusted. But he disassembles the rifle, he reassembles it, and then he should have shot Kennedy, which is also very strange because it doesn't match up. There is a palm print that is found on the rifle, but this palm print is under the wooden stock. So he polished the rifle. He also had no time, enough time to do that. But even if he did it, why should he leave the one and only palm print that he could have polished the easiest, which was under the stock, and leave that one and polish away all the others? So this is all kind of strange to believe. And then on top of that, there is the situation that you can practically be sure that he was not in the sniper's nest on the moment of the shootings. It took some time for me to really be convinced that this is the case. But all facts together, it's absolutely sure that Oswald was never in the sniper's nest at the moment of the shooting. Which are these facts? In the first place, you have a situation that Oswald was on the sixth floor at the moment that other people in the building were going out to eat. This is the official version. But there was a man, and he came to the sixth floor to eat his meal, Charles Givens, and he sits there at the moment that Oswald should be at less than one meter aside of him, and he doesn't hear anything. He doesn't see anything. That I can believe, because you can hide behind a box or something, but he doesn't hear anything. And he sits there for at least 15 minutes. He eats his meal. He drinks a Coke. He eats chicken. And then he goes to his friends on the fifth floor. This Charles Givens says, I didn't see anything and I didn't hear anything on the sixth floor. So at that time, Lee Harvey Oswald was certainly not there. Then later, after the shooting, they have this lady, Vicky Adams, who leaves her office at the third floor. So Miss Garner, who is the responsible for the office where Vicky Adams and her friend worked, goes to the stairs, to the staircase, immediately after the shots. And she sees the police, the policeman coming up, and she doesn't see Oswald coming down. So, no, before that, Oswald had met the policeman on the second floor, and he didn't come down. Mrs. Garner is sure about that, and she can be trusted because it's a very serious lady, and she is very obvious and very clear in her testimony that there's not the testimony of her in the Warren Commission report. Strange enough, also Mrs. Vicky Adams, who is the first person to be on the stairs after the murder, is never mentioned in the report of the Warren Commission. So they try to cover this story up as much as possible. But Barry Ernst, one of the best books ever written about the Kennedy murder, followed this trace of this Vicky Adams. And the lady was 84 years old when he met her, but she was still very clear and very adamant about what she saw that day and how she was treated by the Dallas police and by the FBI afterwards. And so this lady is very sure when she left her office at the second floor, and Mrs. Garner is absolutely sure that that she saw the policeman going up, and that she did not see Oswald coming down. So you can be absolutely sure. It's complicated to explain it, because of course you need all the details of this complicated time frame in which everybody is moving inside the building of the Texas School Book Depository. But if you read the book, you will see minute to minute where everybody is and what is the official testimony of each of these persons and how you can put it together, and being absolutely sure that Oswald cannot be on the sixth floor if you put all these elements together. So he was not in the sniper's nest. So if he was not in the sniper's nest, of course he cannot have killed Kennedy. So then we have a strange situation that it is his rifle that is found, and he is not the shooter, which makes it clear that he is indeed a patsy, that he is framed for the murder, and that somebody has put his rifle on the sixth floor, and that then another shooter, probably a much better shooter than Harvey Oswald, because Lee was not a good shooter at all. They said in the army that he had Maggie's drawers, which meant that he didn't even hit the target when he shot. That was a red flag, and it was called Maggie's drawers by the other soldiers. And he had many Maggie's drawers. He was a very bad shooter. He was indeed a marksman at a certain moment in 1956 when he was in the Marines. After 3 weeks of intensive practicing, he seemed to be just 1 point well enough to be a marksman. But 3 years later, without practicing, he was only a sharpshooter. He had only 191 pounds. Points, and you need 190 points to be a sharpshooter and to be allowed to stay in the Marines. So they gave him 0 plus 1 little point, which meant that he was the absolute worst shooter in the Marines who could stay as a Marine. So he was not a very good shooter either. But he will be replaced, as we know, because he was not in the sniper's nest, by a better shooter. And this better shooter, and this is, I think, I'm the only one who comes to this conclusion, but I have good reasons to do so. I think that the shooter who killed Kennedy used Oswald's rifle. Because, as a matter of fact, the FBI tried to shoot with the rifle, and the army tried to shoot with the rifle afterwards. And a lot of other people have also tried the Carcano, And well, once it is well adjusted, the Carcano is really a good rifle. And so it is possible for a sharpshooter to hit Kennedy. It's 91 meters to the headshot from the sniper's nest. So it's absolutely possible with the Carcano to kill Kennedy from that distance. And so what I think is that Oswald's rifle, very well adjusted by a very good professional shooter, was used to kill Kennedy, which is also a solution for all the problems with the bullets, because if you say it was not Oswald who was the killer of Kennedy, a lot of these crackpot theories have a lot of problems to explain why then that the bullets that were found in the limo have the exact match with Oswald's Carcano. Then they say, no, but they replaced the bullets, and there was a bullet placed on in the Parkland Hospital on the stretcher of Connelly, and all those difficult things to explain who did it and why they did it and why they made it so complicated. But if you indeed believe that the rifle that was used was Oswald's own rifle, then you don't have all these problems, and the Carcano was certainly capable of doing it, and a good shooter was certainly capable of doing it with the Carcano from the sniper's nest. So they only needed this little man, Oswald, to frame him, and you and I, if we would do a murder, we would have the same intention, to find somebody else to blame. Because, of course, when Kennedy is shot, everybody starts looking for the perpetrator. And so you know that you need, if you want to escape with your conspiracy, that you need someone who can be framed for that murder. And it was Oswald, but there are also other people, Sais, Policarpo. You had an attempt to kill Kennedy in Tampa 2 or 3 weeks before Dallas, and an attempt in Chicago in the same period of time. So they had 3 or 4 different opportunities to kill Kennedy. And this also is one of the big answers to the lone nut theorists. It's also lone nut is also a theory, so they cannot prove that it was a lone nut who did it. On top of that, they need 2 lone nuts, because Jack Ruby, in their opinion, was also a lone nut. So they are the lone nut theorists. And everything is coincidence. Everything that you see in this case, the lone nut theorists have to say, okay, this is a coincidence. And one of these coincidences is that there is an attempt on Kennedy in Chicago and an attempt on Kennedy in Tampa. What happens in one of the 2 cases, the landlady sees the 3 men with rifles, 3 professional gunmen with rifles, and she alerts the police. And so these men are not caught, but practically they cannot go further with the attempt. And the second one, there is a strange call from a man muleteer, a certain man who says Kennedy will be killed from a high building with a rifle. And so the police is alerted also in Tampa. And so also there, the attempt is disrupted. And so the third time in Dallas, the coincidence theorists, the lone nutters, the Warren Commission church, they say, look, this cannot be a conspiracy, because only when it would have rained, they would have put the glass bubble on the car. And so then the murder could not be done in the way that it was planned. So it cannot be a conspiracy. It's pure and a coincidence that Oswald had the opportunity to kill Kennedy. But it's not a coincidence if you see it in another way. If there are 3 or 4 or 5 attempts, then indeed they have to wait. And it was not in Tampa, it was not in Chicago, but in Dallas they had the opportunity and Kennedy was killed. And then, this is a strange fact, the man who is framed there is Lee Harvey Oswald. But a week before, there was another man with exactly the same profile, also a communist, also one who has gone to Russia, who has been in Mexico, who is a strange misfit. And he was there on the place of the murder in a high-rise building on a place where Kennedy's car passed. Of course, all these facts are in the documents of the Warren Commission, but not in the report. It's not in the report that they say, look, there was indeed this Policarpo, strange man, misfit. He has been in Mexico. He was a communist. And he was at the same place as the attempt on Kennedy's life that was disrupted by the police at the last moment. And the same goes for Chicago. So this is strange, and this explains a lot of details that Vincente Buglioso says, for instance, you can be sure that it is, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald. Why do we know that Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy? Because there are 53 facts that prove that he is involved. This, of course, is a good reasoning, unless that you can say, but there are also 106 reasons to prove that Oswald didn't do it. There are indeed 53 indications that Oswald is involved because he is framed, but there are also many more indications that he was not involved. As I said already, he didn't touch the rifle, he didn't shoot the rifle, they took the nitrates from his cheek, and these nitrates from his cheek prove that he didn't shoot a rifle on that day. Then the lone nutters say, okay, but you can shoot a rifle without having nitrate on your face. Of course, perhaps, yes, I don't know. He didn't buy any bullets. They looked everywhere in Dallas. There were only two shops where you can buy Carcano bullets. The 6.5 is a rather common bullet, but for this Carcano, you need a special Carcano bullet. It's only sold in two places. And in these two places, they looked for everything. Nobody sold any bullet to Oswald. On top of that, there are only four bullets, three that he shot on the day of the murder, and the fourth that was in the rifle. These are the only four bullets that he has. Never a package. He bought never any bullet. Nobody can prove that he bought any bullet. That's, of course, not a proof that he didn't shoot Kennedy, but all these little facts don't match up. And then in the end, indeed, you have to ask the final question, why on earth would Oswald kill Kennedy? He had no motive, even if he had the opportunity. He had no motive. And in the end, you need only one fact, one proof that it's not correct that he killed Kennedy. And one little fact is enough. And one of these facts, for instance, is that he was not in the sniper's nest at the moment that Kennedy was killed. So all these things together makes, we all believe in the truth. And we all believe that it's absolutely necessary to understand what happened, because it changed so much in the world. And if you believe in the truth, and you read the Warren Report, and you read these books like Buglioso's the thick book, Reclaiming History, and you see all the, or Gerald Posner, Case Closed, in which they say it's absolutely sure that Oswald did it. And then you read the real facts, and you see to the real documents, and you put the pieces together, and you see that it is absolutely untrue that Oswald was the perpetrator. That's nearly impossible that he was, and that he didn't have a reason also, and that this man is killed without even have his day in court. The least that he could expect was to have a normal trial to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he was the perpetrator. But he was killed, and of course, this was very lucky situation for Mr. Hoover and Mr. Johnson, who didn't want anything but cover up the case and to close the case as soon as possible. And once, of course, that Oswald was killed, they had no problem anymore with a trial and with an investigation. You know, there was an investigation with Garrison a few years later about the New Orleans situation. And you see where that ended, what they had to do to silence Garrison in all kind of ways. Not that I am a strong believer in the JFK movie. The JFK movie is, of course, fictional, but a lot of facts that you can see in this movie at least give an idea about what they did to stop Garrison with investigating the murder.
Well, there was an effort against Garrison. Also, the movie is a drama. It's the tip of the iceberg, I usually tell people. There is a book of the film from Zachary Sklar and Oliver.
Yes, indeed, so indeed, yes.
The book of the film, you can see when they put something in there, well, this guy said this, here's the documents, here's the facts. And of course, you know, it's a movie, so artistic license. But
yes,
I tell
yes,
people,
yes.
If you watch the movie and you start looking into it, you will find it's the basis, right? And like you mentioned
yes.
earlier, that the reason maybe you're writing about Oswald is, as you looked into it, you had a bit of sympathy for him because you thought, well, they sure railroaded the guy. And if he didn't do it, this is, you know, what are the facts? And that's kind of where your book really intrigued me is, what are the facts? Here they are.
What I try to do is at least to ask from the reader to start with an open mind. I do not decide what the reader has to think. I think that I have to give the facts. I have to present them as clear as possible. I have to limit the facts to what indeed is necessary to come to a certain conclusion, because it's indeed, you can write a book like Bugliosi. Bugliosi's book is 1,600 pages, and then you have an annex on a CD-ROM of 3,000 other pages. And then you have 4,600 pages, and okay, that's not a real opportunity to come to the facts, because then you have too much information. And so I try to limit the case, as I said, to the things that are necessary. Is there a frontal shooter or not? You don't need that to know whether or not Oswald was in the sniper's nest at the moment of the shooting. So I give only these facts. I give them as detailed as possible, and from each fact, I give the reference where you can find it, on which website, which document, where you can find it in the Warren Commission, in the House Select Commission, in the ARRB documents, where that you can find the original document, so that you don't have to believe me if I say, look, this person said that you can look it up and that you can check that it is correct. And then what I ask from the reader is, okay, this give this man an opportunity. Give him his day in court. Be part of a global jury. You are one of the members of the jury, and you can read in my book about the facts. You can try to understand the facts. You can put the facts in the context. You can understand at least that there was, from official side, a big cover-up to make this man culpable without the trial. He already had the death sentence, so even if he did it, he is punished enough. He has a lot of things going on in his life that nobody can imagine in this situation that this guy must have found himself with the CIA, because not to give away the book, but in the end, it's already on the front page. That I say, look, it's the CIA who is behind the Kennedy murder. And the CIA is a strange organization, and they make all kinds of smoke and mirrors, and nothing is what it seems. You meet somebody and you think he's your friend, and in reality, he's a spy who is taking notes on what you are doing. Everything you think that is reality can be something totally different. On a certain moment, for instance, you have two different Oswalds at the same time. on two different places. Or on another occasion, he is in Mexico in one place, and he is at the doorstep of Silvia Odio on another place. So this is strange, and this situation is created by Atlee Phillips, the CIA agent. And this must have been very strange for Oswald. He's there with his wife. To say what a smart man he must have been, he speaks fluent Russian. I asked to a professor in Slavistic languages, are you capable with as a professor to speak fluent Russian? She said, no, I'm not. And Oswald realized this. So he was a smart man, but he's in this strange world. He has practically no job. He works for a few dollars an hour. And his best friend is a baron, the Meurenschild, a rich baron. And this man becomes his best friend. And all kind of strange things happen around this figure of Oswald. And he doesn't understand his own life at a certain moment. He's in New Orleans, for instance. And at one day, he is the member of an organization pro-Cuba, pro-Castro. And on another day, he's a member of an organization anti-Castro. So all these strange things that happen around this man must have been very confusing for him also, because he didn't understand what was happening in his life. And you see at the day of the 22nd of November that he only realizes after the murder what really happened to him and how he was framed and that he was in a very peculiar situation. I don't have the right answer what they told him. He was certainly involved in the murder of Kennedy. We can be sure about that. But they must have told him a certain story to keep him on track with their plans. For instance, he brought this package in the morning. He said that it was curtain rods. Certainly it was not curtain rods. Why should he bring curtain rods to his job? But in one way or another, he bought this. He brought this package with the curtain rods to the Texas School Book Depository. Afterwards, he leaves the building and he's certainly fleeing for something. He runs to his room in a rooming house and he goes for his rifle, for his pistol. And then he starts running through the streets without a specific plan. And this agent Tippett is looking for him. What I think that happened is that Jim Braden, who was captured in the building right in front of the Texas School Book Depository, was there to wait for Oswald and to take him somewhere. And I think we would probably never have heard very much from Oswald afterwards, because he would have been killed, I think. And that's certainly what he thought also. But Braden was arrested, unfortunately for him. And then they had a second backup plan, and this plan was Tippett. And this guy Tippett is a police agent of the policeman of the Texas Police Department, and he's certainly connected with all kind of strange figures, and he's looking for someone. He's clearly looking until the moment that he sees Oswald, and he immediately takes contact with Oswald, and Oswald shoots him down. A lot of discussion, people say, no, the bullets do not match and all kind of difficult problems. But Oswald was on that place. The policeman was shot. I think you have to be reasonable and to say that there are two Oswalds and that there is a double ganger of Oswald at the same place who shot them. And it's, I think he shot Tippett, so it was certainly... he realized at that moment that he was in a very, very, very big problem. And then he is arrested. And then he says, okay, I'm a patsy. And the next thing he do, one of the last things in his life, is calling a CIA cutout, a certain Mr. John Hurt. And he tries to contact his CIA agent via this man, John Hurt. And there's a lot of problems. You can read it in the book about this phone call. But this is the last phone call he makes in his life. Not to his wife, not to somebody else, no. Not to, he asks for a lawyer, but he doesn't get a lawyer. But that's the last phone call of his life. And so, in my opinion, they must have said to him, look, there is a mock-up assault on Kennedy's life to make him more popular, or there will be somebody shooting at Kennedy, so you have to be on the lookout and to look for something. They must have told him a story, and this is typically for the CIA, and he only realizes afterwards when Kennedy is shot that he is framed, and that, in as a matter of fact, that he is the man who is used, and that he is not the smart spy leading a complicated double life, which was one of the dreams of Oswald in his youth. He always looked to a television series, I Led Through Three Lives, or something like that. And so he was very fascinated by the life of spies. But then at that moment when Kennedy was killed and he was in the neighborhood, then at that moment certainly he realized that he was the patsy. And from that moment on, he ran to escape, which immediately proves where we started in the interview. If this man hated Kennedy, which he did not, he was pro-Kennedy, and if this man had only one desire, to become famous and to become a world historical figure, of course he would have said after the murder, look, I did it. I'm Oswald. I'm a communist. I hate the capitalists. I killed Kennedy. I'm important. But that's not what he do. He runs away, and when they capture him, he says, I'm an idiot. I'm a patsy. And then the day after, of course, he is killed. The Dallas police is really, you cannot imagine what they all did from stupidity. It's unbelievable. But one of the things they did was let more than 100 people in the basement where Oswald was brought to the car that would bring him to another jail. And then, of course, Jack Ruby kills him. And there ends the life of a man who was never lucky. That's why I have some sympathy for him. He was not a bad guy. He was a smart boy who was never lucky in his life, who was never loved, and who tried to make something of himself to be important for the CIA and do all kind of strange things. And he thought that he was important because he had lived in Russia, because he had the CIA contacts, and they certainly asked him to do some strange things, like to go to Mexico, in the Russian embassy in Mexico, or the Cuban embassy. And he thought that he was somebody, or he wanted to be somebody, but in the end he was a stupid little tool that was misused by a cynical CIA who worked together with, there's a lot to do today about deep state, but you can believe that it existed. Kennedy was really thinking about ending the involvement in Vietnam. Kennedy was really thinking about making the moon program, for instance, a joint program with the USSR, and not a race to the moon. He was thinking about changing the lives of his fellow Americans, as he said, it's so beautiful, for the better. And a lot of people were against it for many reasons. And they knew if Kennedy is popular in Dallas, Which is strange, you know. Dallas is mad country for the Democrats, even in those days, that Johnson was also a Democrat, but he was from Dallas. But Dallas was a strange city. And nevertheless, Kennedy came over there, and Adlai Stevenson, the UNO ambassador, was spit at and was yelled at a few weeks earlier. And now Kennedy comes there in Dallas, and everybody is cheering. He was popular in Dallas. At that moment, you can imagine what it means. If you can win in Dallas, then of course you can go for your re-election in the United States. And they knew that once that Kennedy was re-elected for a second term, that they had a big problem, because he had a learning problem in the beginning. He was a playboy. He had not much government experience. But he was a very, very honest and very smart man. And in the beginning, he was also, of course, a showman. His brother Bobby was a difficult man. It was a difficult man. It's another book about Bobby Kennedy that I never wrote, but it would be interesting to write a book about Bobby Kennedy. But Bobby Kennedy tried to murder Fidel Castro together with the mob and with the CIA. Jack was more a practical man. He had his ideas, but the dirty work was done by Bobby Kennedy. And this is one of the reasons that the Kennedy murder was so much linked to Cuba. They needed a figure like Policarpo in Chicago and like Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas, who was linked to Cuba and to the USSR in a certain way, because that gave the signal. So the link to Cuba was very important to frame somebody else for the murder on Kennedy, because it gave a signal to Bobby Kennedy that he could never do an investigation into the real situation of the murder, because everything that is linked to Cuba would immediately bring Bobby in big danger, because it was a signal that they knew that he was involved in trying to murder Castro together with the mob. Now, you know that Bobby was very famous for going against the mob. In his public appearances, he was always the guy who was fighting the mob. And so his political career would have been immediately ended if there was a real investigation into the murder of Kennedy, because they would immediately see that there was a Cuba involvement. And once they tried to look in for this Cuba involvement, they would immediately see that there was also from Bobby Kennedy an involvement in the attempts to murder Fidel Castro, and this together with the mob. So if you are the brother of some of president who is shot, and you are yourself involved in an attempt to murder another head of state, then of course you have not much to complain. So this Cuba link was a signal to Bobby Kennedy not to be involved. And on the other hand, of course, Johnson, they knew in advance, because they knew how he would react. Johnson was not interested in looking further into the case. Once he knew that the USSR or Cuba was or could have been involved, because Johnson didn't want to go to war on the first day of his presidency. Johnson was a very ambitious man, and he had only one big, huge ambition, that's to be the best president of the United States ever. He had the political experience as being the majority leader in the Senate for many years, and he was a very practical man. When he had something in his mind, he most of the time he knew how to realize it. But now he was president of the United States. He had a big plan for this great society of him. And he was not ready on the first day of his presidency to start a world war. And so in these circumstances, the perpetrators, the conspiracists knew that if they could link the Kennedy murder in one way or another to the USSR, that Johnson would do everything necessary to cover up the case. And they knew if it was linked to Cuba, that Bobby Kennedy would not insist on further investigation. And these two things together made from a figure like Lee Harvey Oswald, who they had framed as a pro-Castro militant and who had lived for a time in the USSR, was the exact patsy they needed.
Well, it is very good book. You know, it's also matter of fact, I found myself, you know, not often, but just once or twice, a couple of times, I thought, well, I don't agree with you. But your book was so matter of fact that it started to make me question, well, you know what? Could I be wrong about this? Because maybe I have just assumed something. And, you know, I kept thinking about, it's so logical, everything he'll put down. So that's the good thing, I think, that I came out of your book, that is very matter of fact. It's done like a real investigator. I like the little quotes you have in, you know, Sherlock Holmes. You know, I forget where they are, but every now and then they pop up. And it just, you know, you have to take it at the facts and what are they. Unfortunately, you get the quick idea that there was a cover-up because there's a real omission. The Warren Commission, like you say, if they found out something in the final report, they just leave that out. They don't bring it up. So unless you go through the actual, 26 volumes and looking for things, you would never know that their conclusion is not really supported by what they found.
Strange enough, also in the book of Bugliosi, one of the reasons I wrote the book, you asked me, and one of the reasons was that I was so disappointed in this book of Reclaiming History, because it was set in the community, the JFK community, yes, but wait until Bugliosi has finished his book, because Bugliosi is writing a book about it, and all the answers will be in there. And so the many questions that I had after reading, let's say, 50 or 100 books about Kennedy, was that once reading the Bugliosi Bible, I would know everything and I would say, yes, indeed, okay, let's admit Oswald did it and he was a lone nut. But Bugliosi, in his 1,600 pages, never gives the right answers on the real questions. He avoids the questions. He tells, also, for instance, I mentioned Vicky Adams. I say, this is so strange, this is the first person who is on the staircase at the moment after the shots, and she is not mentioned in the Warren report. And then you see in the whole book of Vincente Bugliosi, he mentions Vicky Adams only once, and it's just to make fun of her. He said, oh, perhaps Mrs. Vicky Adams, she herself was a shooter because she was in the building. A woman can also shoot, he says. It's the only time in the whole book of 1,600 pages that he tries to be funny. And it's on behalf of this lady that was very important for the case and who was silenced. You cannot find another word. She had given her testimony to the Dallas police. And then at a certain moment, this Jim Lavelle, he died a few weeks ago, the man who is beside Oswald at the moment that he is killed. And Jim Lavelle comes to her, this 2 meters high man with his Stetson, and he says to her, we have had a fire in the police department and your testimony is destroyed. So you have to make another testimony. And afterwards, never has there been any fire. Never has there been any testimony of Vicky Adams that has been destroyed. So this is the way this lady is treated, but she's also treated so like that by Vincente Bugliosi. And that's what I said. Somebody has to put the facts in front of the reader, or the listener in your case, and to give the reader the opportunity to think for himself and to add up the facts. And the only thing that you need then is that the reader has trust in you, that the leader says, okay, you lose this trust with Bugliosi after 5 minutes. If you hear the tone of what he is saying, he's making fun of all these conspiracists. And so he lost me very, very soon. The same also with Gerald Posner and a lot of these men. And so I try in the book to keep the reader aboard and to keep the reader thinking for himself and deciding for himself which is the most reasonable solution to this immensely complicated puzzle.
Well, good job. It's very interesting. I mean, I know a lot of the facts already, but you just laid it out so well. I thought, well, I have to, even though your book is a few years old. Now, look, where can people find your book? And do you have a website?
Oh, yes, I have a website. But the most easy way to find the book is on Amazon, of course. If you go on Amazon and you type Flip the May, flip like turning around, and the May, and then Cold Case Kennedy is the first book about the Kennedy and then the circumstances surrounding the murder itself on the day itself. And then the second book we talked about today is the Lee Harvey Oswald Files. And you can easily order it on Amazon.
Good. And do you have your own website for that, for the book, or a Facebook page?
Yes, that's easily www.flipthemay.com in one word.
Good. Okay, I'll make a link to that on the show notes.
Fantastic.
All right.
Thank you, Len, for your interest in the case. We hope that one day the final truth will come out, because the truth is very important for all of us.
Yeah, just to recognize it, to stop it from happening again. You know,
if it was
something that just happened, you go, okay. But when you look into it, it's such a crime. And that's the interest that you think, well, the further I look, the opposite of true is what has been reported. And that's kind of the real education about it, that this kind of thing happened.
It's history.
Yeah.
And then that's one of the problems also. It's also 54 years ago. Who is interested who poisoned Napoleon? Are you interested? In a few years from now, nobody will ask the question anymore, I think.
Well, I found it of interest, and I found your book very interesting. So thank you for writing.
Thank you, Len.
All right. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Nice day to your listeners.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. Good night.